أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. First of all, I would like to give credit where it's due. Certainly this is a very good topic, a topic that is very challenging for me personally, because from my experience of last 7 years in New Jersey, hardly anybody ever talks about grave or ever asked me to talk about grave. So when Hafiz Bhai, Jazakallah Khair, you know, without praising anybody in front of anybody, but giving the credit where it's due, when he said last time, I went back and I started doing homework. And I was scratching my head. I was like, wait a second. Usually I have in my archives something that is there that basically you pick up from there and you take a springboard from it and expound on it. But apparently in the last so many years, there was nothing on this. Even my website that I have there. So I really want to commend Hafiz Bhai, because it made me to think, food for thought. This is something I want to share you on a personal level, my personal thought, off track from as a speaker. When it comes to grave, why do people shy away? Because a lot of times people are scared. And I really admire the people in the world today who really think about qabr, grave, maut. Because Rasulullah said that towards the end of time, remember we took this in the topic with Dajjal, that towards the end of time when Qiyamah comes closer, Muslims will be plenty, a lot of them. And there will be so much plenty like the foam of the ocean waves coming on the beach. Because there's plenty of foam over there, but the essence is not there. There's nothing, it's very hollow. And so the Sahaba asked that, you know, if we are so many, then why would we be so weak that our blood is being spilled all over the world? So Rasulullah said that you will be many and plenty, but you will be afflicted with wahan. And wahan is a weakness. In fact, literally translated means the inner weakness of the soul. And therefore, they asked him, what is wahan? So Rasulullah explained that this weakness is such that the person is engrossed or overwhelmed with the love of money and materialism and wealth and dunya, and is scared from death and the grave. So when I went home and I was thinking about Hafiz Bhai's topic, I said, SubhanAllah, this hadith comes to mind that we are living in a time, I mean this, what I'm trying to share with you is that this is a sign of Qiyamah. That when you go to Masajid, you go to different places, people ask, give you different topics. And when he suggested a topic, over there we were happy, we went home. But when I went home, I was really scratching my head. I said, we are in ritually experiencing a sign of the Day of Judgment. That very few people want to talk about it. And those who do want to talk about it, that's a courage. That is called a gutsy person who is at least meeting the thing heads on. Because fact of the matter is, brother and sister, nobody wants to die. And everybody is scared from death. Look what we do from post to post, from area to area to save life and to somehow avert death. But practically speaking, the Sahaba was a generation, they would long for death. They would long for death and they would prepare for death. We have so many ahadiths of Hayatul Sahaba, Ridwan to Majmain, that they would dig their own graves. They won't ask somebody. They are alive, they're digging grave. It's like you go there, you see somebody digging sand, soil, mitti, khodra. What are you doing? I'm digging my grave. Huh? First thing you say, you digging your own grave? And the saying in Urdu language is, you dig a grave for somebody else, you fall in yourself. But this was a generation that, I wouldn't project it this way that they love death, but this was a generation that was ready to meet heads on with the transition of life, not the end of life. It's very important to understand that the grave life is a life. Death is not the end of life. Yes, it's the end or culmination of the life on earth. And that's why death or maut, literally, in Islam, is one of the meanings that is like transition. It transpires you, it transforms you from one realm to another realm. Just like we are here, I don't know if you'll be surprised to hear this or not, just like we're here meeting each other, we know each other, we live in New Jersey, we have contacts, you know. Similarly, there is a life underneath the sand, the soil, which is known as barzakh life. And in the barzakh life, souls, arwah, alam al-arwah, the souls, they meet each other, as the hadith tell us. I mean, that's why I brought you to show you something. This is a book, this thick, fat book that you see, all in Arabic, is all about the grave life. It's just about grave. This is just about grave. This thick, fat book. And when he told me, to talk about it, I said, you can't, this topic cannot be done justice. So I therefore chose certain aspects of it. And if time permitting for next time, or if people like to continue, they don't get scared that much enough tonight, then we can continue this topic, or we can go to another topic. But I have prepared in such a way that we give it in a nutshell today, the main points. Of course, I can't go in details because we don't have time, but I've pick up the pillars of it. So what I was saying is that the life in grave needs to be understood in such a way that it's a transition. And that's how the Sahaba left behind a legacy for us. They lived on earth as a role model. They were preparing for the transition to the death as a role model. And of course, once they went into the grave, we don't know what's going on with them over there. Remember, we read about them in the books of history, but practically speaking, all the Khulafa, Rashidin, Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali, all of them are right now in Barzakh. They're in their grave life. And even before that, if you go, Musa al-Islam, Isa al-Islam, you keep going all the way back to Adam al-Islam. Everybody's in the grave life. It's like they say, it's a whole new world out there, which only dawns upon us when we have... I'm not joking. This is exactly known as Hijki, which is known as in Arabic language, and Niza. Niza is when the soul is at the last moment extracted out. I don't know if you've witnessed death, but I saw my grandfather dying, so I know. I felt through the death. I could see in your own labs, you know, being a young child boy, at that time I didn't realize, because I thought that maybe this is it. Well, that was my reaction. I was laughing. It's like, what happened to Dada? What's he doing? But then as I grew up, I realized and studied the books of Islam, this is known as a Niza. Niza means hiccups. When the soul is being extracted, it has last few seconds of hiccups. And that moment is the most cumbersome moment on the body in the whole world. You forget everything. Like, imagine the biggest pain ever happened in your world. It's nothing, minuscule, compared to this, known as Sakaratul Maut and a Niza. Niza is like the threshold of the conversion of soul being extracted and going to the next. So this is just a foundation, bottom line that, you know, I really, really commend the group, the people that are here who are willing to listen. Because practically speaking, from my experience, in some circles, even in New Jersey, people are not ready to even think about death or talk about qabr, grave. Or like they say, kya karte hai aap log, darate rehte khali, koi aur topic do. So I was really, really happy, not shocked, that at least there is some group of people alive today in this world who are willing to learn the bitterness and sourness of life. But it is not that bitter. Let us begin with. Life in this dunya is known as Hayatul Dunya. Life in the Barzakh is mentioned in one place in the Quran, Surah 23. Right, kids, you can learn that. We can ask you that next time as a question. Surah 23, what Surah is 23? It's Surah Mu'minun. Alright, Surah Mu'minun, that comes right after Surah Hajj, which is, I believe, the 20th para, 20th juz, if you memorize. So in Surah Mu'minun, Surah 23, verse number 99 and 100 is our topic today. Allah SWT tells us over there that كَلَّا إِنَّهَا كَلِمَةٌ هُوَ قَائِلُهَا وَمِنْ وَرَائِهِمْ بَرْزَخٌ إِلَى يَوْمَ يُبْعَثُونَ. Allah SWT is saying, the previous ayah was that the soul will say, when the soul goes into the grave, all right, it will say, oh Allah, give me one more chance. Because reality has sunk into it. They can see everything, they can hear everything. And they can feel also. We'll talk about it, what the feeling aspect is. So immediately the first gasp is, you know, it's like a child begging a teacher, please give me one more chance. I just want to go over 69. Well, where were you all this time? I gave you so many chances. Now that the report card is done, you bring the report card to me and say, give me one more chance so I can pass you. That is the kind of beggingness that is portrayed in that ayah. And the next verse is verse number 99 that Allah SWT says, Kalla, no, never. إِنَّهَا كَلِمَةٌ. Verily it is a word. هُوَ قَائِلُهَا. That this soul is saying, meaning this promise or this gesture that the soul is giving in grave, that, oh Allah, give me one more chance, let me go back, and I will do everything. That the Quran is saying to us. And Allah is still denying the fact. In the ayah, Allah is saying, no, vehemently Allah is saying, denying the fact, no, I know you, I created you insan. I know your shaqsi, I know your khasla, your feature inside, that when I give you another life, you'll go back and again do the same things you did in the first time. إِنَّهَا كَلِمَةٌ هُوَ قَائِلُهَا. It's just a lame duck excuse that the insan is doing because now the reality is sinking and touching the skin. And then Allah SWT tells us, وَمِن وَرَائِهِم بَرْزَخٌ. The word barzakh is used over here. And barzakh in Arabic language literally means a barrier. Like you can say, this table is a barzakh. It's stopping me and Brother Hafiz. It's the barrier. If I remove this, then we are face to face. So basically, barzakh is a barrier. And the ulama of tafsir say that this barzakh life is a barrier between life on earth, hayatul dunya wa hayatul akhirah, and life hereafter. I like to use the word more for than barrier of a storage place. In the morgue, you store dead bodies. In the U-Haul or rental space, storage place, you know, they give ads in Manhattan, you're driving up and down the West Side Highway, you know, you want space, just store it. You don't have a space in the house, in the apartment, you store it. So all these bodies that are dying, I was doing just a Google search. Every second, there is not one person dying, but there's hundreds of people dying every second in the world. And every second, there are so many people being born. Babies are born, and people are dying, young and old, male and female. So at any given second, so many people are dying. And so many people are going to the graves, regardless of their ethnicity, their religion, their background. Whether they're Muslim, Catholic, but they're dying. And therefore, where are they going? A storage place. Storage place. Stored. How big is this earth that it stores the human race? And so many people. This is barzakh. Now, barzakh can be of... The life in grave is known as barzakh. But it does not specifically assign to the grave itself. Qabr. Because many people, they don't have a qabr, but they have a barzakh. Now you might ask, how can somebody not have a qabr? What happened in 9/11? How many people were buried in 9/11? They were burnt, cremated, gone, dust. Many, many hundreds and thousands of people. People sometimes they drown in the ocean. Titanic went down. Did anybody go down to the ocean bed, get their bodies? They're gone, dissolved. So basically, barzakh is a name classified attached to the life of the transition period, where you are in transit. Like when we go over to India or Pakistan on transit visa, you go to Dubai, get a transit visa, go out 48 hours, 72 hours, then you come back. You're never staying there. You don't have the desire to stay there because you know my destination is not this. My destination is there. So life in the grave, barzakh, is transit visa. But amazing thing is, brothers and sisters, that the transit life is by far and most bigger than the life on earth. Just look to our grandfather. My grandfather died in 1990, 2008 already, 18 years gone. He died very young, 58 or something. So therefore, and his father, my great-grandfather, died so many long time. If a person average life lives 60 years, 60, 70 years here, we're living 60, 70 years, it's nothing compared to the life we spend in the grave. Look at our great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, great. You keep going back one generation, where are all of them? In the grave. When did they die? Probably age 60, 70, 80. Boy, agar hua tha 90, you know, somebody went. But if they live 90 years on earth, they're living more than that 90 years in the grave. And that's the same thing for us. When we pass away from this dunya, we may have passed at certain ages, and then the life over there is more longer. Well, the point I'm trying to make is, brothers and sisters, that the life in the grave is always greater than. You know, in arithmetic, we do this inequality signs. It's always greater than. It's never going to be lesser than. Greater than. No matter how aged somebody dies, even a 100-year-old person dies, still the life in the grave will be bigger than. So therefore, the message that Allah is giving us in this ayah, وَمِن وَرَائِهِمْ بَرْزَخٌ إِلَى يَوْمِ يُبْعَثُونَ, and from behind them is a barrier till the day of resurrection. Day of يُبْعَثُونَ. Al-ba'ath means when we will come out of our graves. So who knows when Qiyamah is going to come? We don't know it's going to come in the next 10 years or 100 years, 50 years. Allah knows best. Certainly we see the signs, but we cannot speculate, pinpoint. So therefore we know that the life in the grave is going to be longer than the life on earth. What are we doing about it? This is the message of Quran. Quran is not something to just scare us, to, you know, literally haunt us that we have sleepless nights. Quran is a food for thought. Quran is a book that is a preparation, prepares us. Yes, we grew up in a generation. I certainly know, and I used to be a kid and a young man, a young boy in school, high school age, and we would go to the Jummah in the masjid. Every Maulvi is saying, oh, Jahannami, Jahannam, oh, Qabr, grave. The idea of philosophy of Islam is not to scare the wit of people, but rather to prepare them. to enrich them, empower them. That, look, that thing is coming. There's no denying of the fact. No matter the biggest protection I can buy of death, I cannot get away from death. Reality is death is there. And that's what Allah said. Kullu nafsin za'iqatul maut. Very clear-cut word. This appears twice. Once in Surah Al-Imran and once in Surah Ankabut. Kullu nafsin za'iqatul maut. No. So every soul will taste death. Why did Allah use the word taste? Za'iqa. It's an Urdu word and it's an Arabic word. Both means taste. Meaning, when you use the word taste, what is the other word that starts with E comes to mind? Think about it. A word that starts with E comes to mind. If I say you taste this, Eat? No. You think of eat. I knew that. That's the trick I put in there. By the way, this eat has only 3 letters. This word that I'm looking for has more than 5-6 letters. Something, okay, I'll give you another hint. Something that you look for when you're hiring somebody as an employer. Abhi tak nahi aaya bhai. Kya hire karte aap log? Let me drink a sip of water, keep thinking. Yes. Eligible? No. Yes, sister? Aap naal utaya? No.
Oh my God.
Employer, what's the first thing they look? Do they look at the degree? No.
Eligibility?
Experience. Thank you. I told you, don't put him on this chair. Because then you'll get tough questions. Experience, isn't that true? Every employer goes, say, I don't care what you learned. Do you know this job? Do you have experience to do this thing? And when you taste something, you experience. If I tell you, this is the most sweetest drink ever, but you never taste it, you never realize. I may give the best description of it. I say this apple is the best. It's so sweet and delicious. You don't know until you experience it. And how you experience it? You taste it. So that's why Allah used the word taste. Kullu nafsin za'iqatul maut. Person who's sitting in front of the dying soul. If your loved one is dying, your dada, dadi, nana, nani, mother, father, who is dying, you can feel the pain for them, but you don't really feel the death because your time is coming. And I remember that when you see the shivering of the body, there's nothing to explain the whole ordeal of death. Because no matter how much you witness death, people dying in your own laps, how much you witness it, you still cannot explain until you experience it. And that's why Allah said, كُلُّ نَفْسٍ زَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ وَإِنَّمَا تُوَفُونَ أُجُورَكُمْ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ. Verily, everybody will taste death and you'll be given your ajr, your reward, your recompense on the Day of Judgment. فَمَنْ زُحْزِي عَنِ النَّارِ. Whoever saved from hellfire will be فَقَدْ فَازَ, successful. So therefore, we in this context, we understand and realize what is qabr life. Qabr, the way I look at it, is a not a destination, a transit place. But a transit place where you're living more than your original place. We started life in dunya. Well, if you want to be very technical, we started life in alami arwah. Like Allah said in Surah Araf, very clearly. That he took an oath from all the souls, Muslim, non-Muslim, kafir, munafiq, anyone, all the souls. And he took the oath, أَلَفْتُ بِرَبِّكُمْ, am I not your Lord? قَالُوا بَلَى. They all said in unison, yes, you are our Lord, O Allah. So what happens to this soul when it comes down to earth? It gets deviated and sidetracked. And now, in context of that, when that is the first realm of life. Imam Ghazali rahimahullah says that life or human being is composed of two. And these two dimensions of human being are throughout their life. Life in the grave, life on earth, and life in hereafter. What are the two components? Ruh and jasad. Body and soul or spirit or nafs that we say. When these two things come together, if you really want to get a little bit technical, sorry for sidetracking a bit, but the first hadith that is there about the khalq of Adam, Adam alayhi salam, when Allah created Adam, he just created the body, mujassama, body, no ruh in it, just a statue, hollow, sitting or standing, huge, 60 foot tall, huge hands, huge legs, huge finger and fingernails and whatnot, body, head, but nothing. That's why it says in the hadith in Bukhari that shaitan came and started making tawaf around Adam. And then Shaitan went like this and started laughing. What did Allah create? Hollow piece of thing. Shaitan did mockery of this human being, and this is the battle that has been going on from Azal to Abad, from day one to day end. This is the battle between Adam and Shaitan and the Bani Adam, children of Adam. Then Allah said, wait, Iblis, you don't know. His name was Iblis. You don't know what this creation is. Then Allah breathed ruh, soul, ruh into this body. Body was created first. Great, behtreen shahkar, great creation of Allah. Because Allah has told us in the Quran, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. We have created insan in the best of formation. So when Allah breathed the soul, as the hadith goes on, when the soul entered the head, the body began into harkat. When it passed through the eyes, because the soul entered from the top. When it passed through the eyes started moving. When it passed through the nose, he sneezed, as the hadith says of Rasulullah. When it passed through the tongue, started moving. But yet does not know what to speak, because Allah did not teach Adam alayhi salam to speak yet. Then it goes to the neck, starts moving, looks around. And that hadith is very profound hadith. It gives you a depiction of how humanity began, how life began for us. Soul is entering every part of body of Adam alayhi salam, and Adam is coming into harkat. When it reached the shoulders, it started moving. It reached the hands, started moving. And then Iblis got stunned. Wow, I thought that this was a hollow piece of wood or something. Nothing. Because Allah created insan from Torah. And then when it went all the way to the... And that is why the hadith says that Allah has said in the Quran that خُلِقَ الْإِنسَانَ عَجُولًا. Insan has been created very impatient. Because the hadith says that this is 60 foot tall insan. We're not talking about 6 foot person. The soul enters and boom, it's gone to the leg. By the time it's coming from Adam al-Islam's head down to the leg, Adam al-Islam became impatient. It's taking too long. As the hadith says that when it reached below the waistline, his whole top body is moving, but he said, why isn't my leg moving? What's going on? And that's why Rasulullah recited the ayah in the hadith that, look, Allah said in the Quran, وَخُلِقَ الْإِنسَانَ عَجُولًا. We created insan impatient. The first human being is impatient. Even being the first human being and the first prophet of Allah, still Allah is showing who we are, what we are. What are we made of? We are made of impatience. That our father, the first human being, was also. But that does not mean that we be impatient, say, okay, shrug it off shoulder, fine. Allah said in the Quran, impatient or impatient? Especially for kids. Because this is human nature. You're more impatient when you're younger, and you become more patient as you grow. Look at youth. I remember, sometimes you go to Toys R Us, you see kids on the floor, sweeping the floor. Not sweeping, they just lie down there and say, I want to get this toy. So I call that sweeping. Because the mother father doesn't want to buy the stuff, and that guy says, I'm not going to get up from this floor unless you buy me that thing on the shelf. This is impatience. I want it now. I don't have time to wait. But as you grow, you learn with experience that there are a lot of things you can have to live without. You can't live with everything. So when that is the beginning of khalq, what I meant from that hadith was to show that, look, this was the origination of the partnership between soul, ruh, and body. As long as we are alive on earth, this body and soul conglomeration continues. This is a partnership. And this is also the meaning of the ayah that Allah said, لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. We have created insan in the best of creation. Look at this precision. The soul is saying, I want to move my hand. This is the soul saying, not the body. My body is not saying. But when the soul has so much precision and perfection that the soul in the brain is calculating milliseconds, sending through the neurons, down to the nerves, and when it wants to stop, this is ahsani taqweem. Did you know how long it took me to say stop? Milliseconds. But how long it took my hand to stop? Even less than milliseconds. This is the power of ruh. Soul. We usually call that brain, intellect, mind. Scientists might put it all, this is your brain calculating, sending signals, calculating at very fast speeds and processing the information. You thought about it, your hand was going, you thought about stopping it, and when you said stop, it stopped. It didn't, there was no staggering or lag behind. Like I know in computers they say you want to stop something, it takes time. By the time the processes are finished, Allah has created this insan amazing, very unique. This insan has full control of the body. Why? Because Allah has given us free will. You are responsible for your actions, your words. You have to bear the consequences, or you reap the rewards. Because in you, insan, Bani Adam, is perfection and precision. Use it to your advantage, or abuse it to your disadvantage. That's all their life is. Use or abuse. What's the difference between use and abuse? Two letters, AB. You attach AB in front of use, you start abusing things. You remove AB, and if you're abusing somebody, you start using them. Talk about capitalism. So we move forward. That in that aspect of this soul and body, the life on earth continues. We go about our things. But a lot of times we don't see the rewards right away in front. And nor do we see consequences at times. But we have to pay it in the form of azab al-qabr. I had to go through all this to make us realize, what is azab al-qabr? Because there are some people who are exempt from azab al-qabr, mind you. Yes, Allah has exempted some people from azab al-qabr. They will not go through that. I wish we all become of them, inshallah. I mean, this is our dil ki tamanna, this is our bottom of the heart wish, that Allah make all of us from those people who are exempt. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. I usually have a tendency of forgetting things. So if I do forget this thing, then remind me later on that I had to say that. So now we move forward. That consequences is the name of azab al-qabr. Rewards is the name of gifts of the qabr. Just like in this life, we have good and evil. We have consequences and rewards in this life. So has Allah put that also in the life of barzakh, grave. Azab al-qabr is that terminology given to the consequences aspect. But remember, Allah is not oppressive, zalim, zulm. Those people who are going through azab al-qabr, they will also go through some good times. They must have done some good in the world. So those goods that they've done in the world will come back to them in the grave. Now, how does azab al-qabr begin? Because it was such a huge topic, I had to really pick things. So I thought of saying that, what happens, or how do we get to the qabr? When soul is leaving in this body, we call that sakaratul maut. Sakaratul maut is the first sign of death that begins on the body. And that's why Rasulullah said in the hadith, that when you see on someone sakaratul maut coming, immediately rush to start reciting which surah?
Yaseen.
Ah, very good. Surah Yaseen. Did I tell you about that joke? I think I probably did it in Tinak in Ramadan last year. About Surah Yaseen, that there was this Maulvi sahab who pretended to be a Hafiz and he would recite the Taraweeh in the village. And the village, the people were so ignorant that they didn't know anything about Quran. So, oh, this is mashallah Hafiz sahab. So he's going to recite. So there was this one guy who had memorized Surah Yaseen. So he thought that, you know, I don't know nothing about it except about the Quran except Yaseen. So when he will come from first Ramadan and he come all the way to Surah Yaseen, at least I can enjoy and be able to listen to him. Close to the end of Ramadan, he comes up to the Imam Sahib, the Sheikh, says, you know, Ramadan is about to finish, we're going to be having Khatam Taraweeh soon. I never heard Surah Yaseen from you. And you said, you're Hafiz. He said, you're a foolish person. Yaseen is to be recited on dead people. You guys are alive. You're praying behind me. So why should I recite Yaseen? And this is how. But that was the joke part of it, to show that people have used or made this information so common that it's to be decided on dead. But not on dead. It is to be decided on people who are facing dead. A lot of times what happens is when we have buried our people in the graveyard, come back home, Yaseen Sharif Khatam Karo. What to do now Khatam now? The person is gone. The hadith is that we should recite the Surah Yaseen upon the person at the moment of death, when the person is facing the pangs of death. Why? Because in Surah Yaseen, if you look at the gist of the theme line, the topics that are discussed over there, it is something that soothes the soul. In fact, the soul as it is coming out, alright, and the person are reciting in Ladwa Surah Yaseen, it becomes easier upon the soul to digest and absorb the torment of death. And again, the death, we know that is two types. If the person is muttaqi and good person, alright, therefore the angel of death, Malak al-Maut, will take out very smoothly. Like a hair from a bag of flour. I'll take it, body means a body. But if the person is a very wretched soul, a very evil person, then it will be taken out just like you plucked a hair out of your body. Or even worse than that. Very painful. One statement about Malak al-Maut. There is a misconception young and old, everybody in Muslim world, that, oh, Malak al-Maut, is it one angel or many angels? Let me see what the perception is here. What do you guys think? Is there one angel? Well, there are a lot of agents of it. But if it's one angel, how come people are dying every second in all parts of the world? He's running around. He's going from China to America and Russia and then back down South Africa, then there, wherever somebody's dying, this guy has to run along a lot.
Big size, the whole earth is like...
We got great island people here. He's right, very good. The angel of death, alright, as the hadith tells us, that the Sahaba asked Rasulullah, that Ya Rasulullah, this Malak al-Maut, by the way, Malak al-Maut, angel of death is his name. His name is not Israel, as some people claim to be, because there's no hadith that, I don't know where this came up from, that people started saying Israel, Israel is the name of the angel of death, but there's no authenticity to it. And he is such a huge angel. To give you an idea, Jibreel alayhi salam, Jibreel is the archangel, sardar of angels, leader of angels. And we know all that Rasulullah told us that I saw Jibreel in his full haybah, in his full creation, and I couldn't see nothing except Jibreel. I did not see the horizon, I did not see the sky, I did not see the earth. Like he is overpowered, overwhelmed in the wujud existence of Jibreel. So if Jibreel is such a huge angel, then Malak al-Maut, angel of death, who may be smaller than him, because he's younger than him, but yet he is so huge, as the hadith says, that he says, the whole world is in between my eyes. And that does not mean, by the way, don't take it wrong, it does not mean that angels have eyes. It's an Arabic phrase of saying that it's, you know, like it's meri nazar mein, like it's under my observation. You can't run away from it. Meaning what he's trying to say, it does not literally mean that angels have eyes. So what he meant, angel, Rasulullah is saying that the angel of death has an observation upon the 6 billion people on the earth right now. So all the 6 billion people walking, sleeping, eating, wherever they are, in the bathroom, on the road, in the bedroom, wherever they are always under the supervision of Malak al-Maut. And he says that all I have to do is make ishara, but then you have to go and reach out, just ishara, and the soul is taken out. And when the soul is taken out, it's immediately handed over to either angels of Jannah or angels of Jahannam, depending on the character of the human being that lives there. So this is a soul. One aspect, there is a hadith of Rasulullah that is a matter of rajul tabi'a basaruhu. If the person dies, their eyesight follows the soul. Now we're getting to the details of it. When the soul is taken out, sakratul maut is something that everybody goes through. The pangs of death, everybody goes through. Even Rasulullah went through. Remember when Fatima, the daughter of Rasulullah, she was wiping, you know, her beloved father's head, wiping with towel, wiping the body, and he was shivering and he was shaking, and she said, I could not look at the pain of my father. This is Rasulullah, that Khatumul Anbiya, Sayyidul Mursaleen, Rahmatulil Alameen, Ali Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that he's going through. And she said, Wa karb abata, oh, the pain of my father, oh, the pain of my father. 3 times she repeated. She was so much in pain looking at the father. Imagine what the father was going through. And the Rasulullah was going, when you are going through Sakratul Maut, you are dozing off. You know, unudgi galo, it's like a drowsiness. You're coming in, coming out. Coming in, coming out. And that's why at times you'll see people start recognizing, huh? Kaunutum. Because they're going through a phases, and that is the last moments of the death. That's why people are reciting Surah Yaseen. And then comes the Nizah. Nizah is, like I said earlier, that the soul, as it's taken out, it just like it entered from the top, it comes out from the bottom. Allah entered the soul to Adam Islam from the head to the top, going down, as the from Bani Adam, children Adam, and the soul is taken out, it starts coming out from the ankles, coming to the legs, the hamstrings, you know, thighs, going all the way until it reaches to the nose. When it reaches the eye follows and it's gone through the head. That's why if you ever see, I mean, they show this a lot in the Hollywood, Bollywood movies, that when the person dies, the eyes remain open, eyelid open. That is the hadith of Rasulullah. That whenever the soul is taken out of the body, the eyesight follows it. And this is the last connection that the body had with the soul. When the soul is extracted, eye is the only thing from the body that is indicating this is God. So naturally when there's a murder or somebody has become cold, first thing they go and look at the eye. If the eye is wide open, you never see that when somebody died their eye went closed. It means open. Somebody has to come in and shut it off. This is the exact meaning of the Hadith of Rasulullah, that the soul, the body follows the soul and it has gone out of the head. تَبِعَ بَصَرُ. And then we do the ghusl and janazah and all that, we put them in the grave. Now we talk about the grave. Rasulullah said, it is extremely disliked, hated. In fact, in another hadith, he said, extremely painful on the soul, the one who died, that people go and cry in front of the grave. And that is why he forbade people, don't you dare ever cry in front of the grave. Especially the person you just buried. Because that person begins to scream and shout and yell, such that the animals can hear, the trees can hear, even the fish in the ocean can hear, the birds can hear. نہیں سننے والا تو ہے یہ نادان انسان. The only person that cannot hear is jinns and human beings. And the hikmah or the wisdom that Rasul said, that why Allah stopped, why Allah did not give us this capacity to hear in what's going on in the graveyard, because then life will become misery for us. We will do nothing except we'll be so frightened. All this life that you see in dunya and earth, this glitter and glamour, everything will finish. People will be just thinking, I have to go there. It's like kind of like showing somebody being punished. If you're torturing somebody and you do it as a public viewing, everybody is going to be dreading that, oh no, my turn is coming next. So you won't be able to live peacefully. In order for insan, human being, Bani Adam, to live peacefully on earth, Allah has shut off our ears and shut off our eyes to see what's going on. But the animals, they hear. Baha'im, as the hadith says. Remember when the tsunami came, many people in those areas said that the animals had a warning saying they started moving to the upper ground. So this is another hadith of Rasulullah, that when the natural disasters come, these animals get to know ahead of us. You know, animals are masoom. They're not like us crooked, evil people who do so much mischief on earth. So Allah gives them the ability to have this edge over us. And so that is why Rasulullah said, don't cry at the graveyard, rather at that place we can only make dua for that person. Because by crying, it is paining that person more. And they are crying and they are shouting and screaming, as if they are shouting and yelling, saying, please, chup kar jao, be quiet, in the name of Allah, be quiet. But we can't hear them. And they assume that we are hearing them. That's why they are yelling and shouting. And at times they start saying, kyao ye, why are these people not listening to me? It's the soul that's talking in the grave. They say, why? You know, moments ago these people used to listen to me. Because now the soul is in a different realm, my dear brothers and sisters. Here in dunya, the soul it's not me who's talking to you, it's my soul that's talking to you. But my soul is using this body and tongue to talk to you. When my soul, if I die right now here, my soul goes away, I will not be talking to you. Because the soul has left. But I will be able to see you from the grave. And I'll be able to hear you from the grave. But you all cannot hear me or see me from the grave. And that is why Rasulullah said that this hadith is very profound in terms of the Sahaba. And they told us that we have to be very mindful when we go to the graveyard, especially if we go to the janazah. That is why everybody is requested, especially, you know, women, with all due respect to sisters, but they are more emotional. And that is why Rasulullah didn't want women to go to the graveyards. Although there are some fuqaha, some jurists that have given opinion, it is okay for women to go on based on certain conditions. And there's like a whole plethora of conditions, like 10, 20 different conditions. If you really look at it, none of our subcontinent women fulfill those conditions in a really way. First thing is there's be no crying, and there are many other things, like there has to be a mahram that go there, and what is the modality. But the bottom line is that even if we go to the masjid for janazah, we should not be crying. If we are praying janazah in front of the body, we should not be crying, because all these things aggravate the pain. If you really want to pay our last respects to that person, that dead man or woman, the best respect we can pay them is silence and dua. Because the more we cry, the more it hurts and pains them. And there are certain things we recite when we're putting them in. As soon as we put them in, now begins the barzakh. Okay, by the way, when the soul has left the body, you know, when the first news comes, that person has gone, mata, tufiya, person has died. Now the whole family is torn apart, everybody's crying, but the body is there, soul is gone. Where does it go? As many of the hadiths point to us, that Allah takes the soul away up in the heavens. And it is in a hung up state. And that's why Rasul said, meaning it has to come back. It wants to come back and rejoin the body. But it cannot rejoin the body on earth. It has to be below the earth. So hence Rasul said that, O people, O Muslims, whenever your people, your loved ones die, rush to bury them. rush to bury them. He said the worst azab you can give to the dead person is to delay their burial. The quicker the better. So much so that let's say Zohar ke baad intiqal hua, Asar ke baad dafnat. This is how fast he said. If somebody passed away after Fajr, after Zohar, put them in. After Zohar, meaning whatever the last Salah passed, if you can do that fast, of course, you know, today the modalities is difficult, you know, funeral home, washing, this, it becomes difficult at times, but at least, if we can't do, that is the fastest we can do, but if we can't do that fast, at least within that day. And here comes the point that we are so much entrenched in. Oh, body we have to send overseas. Bomb the body, put in a box, get PIA, Air India or something, has to be buried over there, in our family yard over there. No, bury wherever. The argument they give, let me tell you the argument they give. The argument is there. The Hadith Rasulullah says that Salihin, good people, righteous people, should be buried with good people. So, you know, our elders, our Buzurg who have this philosophy of sending the body back, they say, this is Kufristan, this is all bad land, and bad people are buried here. Why should I be buried here? Because the Hadith Rasulullah said is that where you're buried is where you'll be raised from. So let's say, you know, you're buried next to a very evil, cruel person, on the right, on the left, in the front, in the back. When you get raised on the Day of Judgment, you are raised among these people. So therefore, I encourage people that if you want to bury your loved ones, bury them in the Maidan, bury them in the graveyard where good people are buried. And that's why I said that the best place to be buried on earth is where? Jannatul Baqi. Subhanallah. When you're coming up on Yawm al-Qiyamah, you're coming up with Sahaba. With Rasulullah right there, Abu Bakr right there, Uthman, great. That is one place where we don't ship the body. Did you ever see any Indian Paisani saying from Makkah, Madinah, ship the body? No, but in England, in France, in America, ship the body. Why you don't ship the body? If you have a principle, be principle-oriented. Ship body from everywhere. No, this is Jannatul Baqi, you have to be buried here. So same thing here. The argument is that there are some good people buried here too. Go to Protova grave, go to Cranberry grave, go to Elizabeth. Wherever they are, there's a Muslim graveyard. What the Hadith is saying, don't be buried right next to people who are evil. But in every graveyard, there's a Muslim chunk of land. So you're buried amongst Muslims. Now, and that's where you'll be raised up from. These Muslims will be rising from this graveyard. These non-Muslims rising from this part of the graveyard. So that does not give us excuse to ship the body. Because by shipping the body, we are creating more aziyat, more pain on the body. So the soul is hung up, it's not going to come back. So imagine if it takes 7 days to bury them back in India or Pakistan from here, sending the plane from New York. That 7 days, that soul is going through a lot of anguish and pain. So therefore he said, bury quickly, fast. Now when we bury, what happens? There's a hadith of Rasulullah, he said, three things follow the dead person to the graveyard. Two come back, one stays behind. You know that famous hadith, right? What are the three things?
People, amal,
yeah, the way it is, not sadaqa jariya. The thing is, your loved ones. If husband died, wife will follow. Maybe not go to the graveyard inside, but at the boundary wall. Wife and kids, family members. If wife has died, the husband and kids, family members will follow to the graveyard. That's one thing. Second, it's mal. The wife and kids or the husband and kids are going in the car, that's mal. The money that the person has left behind, they have bought with that stuff to take all the way there. So the mal is also of the person going to the graveyard. And then amal, third thing. These three things go there. Two come back, wife or husband, either case, and the kids come back. Mal come back also, because the person who died doesn't take anything over there. They leave behind for the loved one. So mal and family is left behind, amal stay there. And if we have very little amal and a lot of family members, no good. But if we have very little family members and a lot of amal over there, that's the best thing. They stay there in the grave. Now, there's another very, very chilling hadith. And I really beg you, request you to please next time when you go to the graveyard, think about this hadith and try to implement it if you can at the best. Whether it's for your loved one or anybody out there. Rasulullah said that when people go to the graveyard, you know, while this whole process is going and people are preparing and other thing, when they go to the graveyard, everybody goes, they take time out of their work, take time out of the schedule, they go to the masjid, pray the janazah, follow the funeral all the way to the graveyard. When they go to the graveyard, they bury. After that, everybody's in a rush to leave. How many people you see standing over there? Hardly. Even the loved ones, the son or the father or the brother of that person deceased person or sister or whatever the case may be, they will leave. The hadith of Rasulullah says, after you have put the last drop of sand on the qabr, and as soon as you leave, Munkar and Nakir come in. Munkar and Nakir come in and start questioning, and then the azab of qabr starts. But Rasulullah said, when you bury the person, try to stay there as much as you can. Because as long as you're staying there, after burying the person, Munkar and Nakir don't come. They wait until the last person has left. So we see in the Hayat of Sahaba that some of them, if they went to bury somebody after Dhuhr, they stayed there till Isha. Isha took that time. If they have to pray, they pray. It's fine to pray in a graveyard, but you pray towards the Qibla. Don't pray towards the grave. But you can pray, because all of the land of earth, Allah has made us for prayer. Halal. And these people, our ancestors, our Sahaba, Tabi'een, the reason they used to spend so much time, because even if they're not their loved one, they're still spending time, because they're saying, I know, one day I have to go in the grave. And how would I feel that if people leave me alone so fast, Munkar Nakir come. And then the whole ordeal starts, which is very, very horrendous. So that's why Rasulullah said, the last gift that you can give to the deceased person is not money, is not helping their kids and family, it's standing at the grave as much as you can. I know it's sometimes very tough because people have to go back to work, have to do that thing, but remember this hadith. He said, if you cannot stand right there, at least go slowly 40 steps back. 40 qadam tak aistah se chale. Because within the radius of 40 steps, this is how Rahman Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is. Now he doesn't send Munkar Nakir until any loved one or any person who went to the janazah stays in the radius of 40 steps. And 40 steps is pretty big. The grave is only 6 foot over here. Imagine 40 steps, that's a huge circle. So if you keep coming slowly, slowly, slowly until your edge of the 40 circle circumference, at least you have done a favor to the person there. And by the way, there's another hadith of Rasulullah. Then the person who we bury in the grave, they're seeing this. This one really makes me cry a lot at times. They are seeing, you see your own kid, your son. Ah, beta ja raha. And people are crying. Because the soul now is in a very different realm. The soul, reality hasn't sunk into the soul yet that I've left the dunya. Soul is thinking that I've rejoined the body. Remember, the soul was hung upstage. You buried the body in the grave. Now the soul has rejoined the body as soon as we buried them. So now it thinks in this, deception. That they can hear me, because they used to hear me when I was alive. So they start saying, where are you going, where are you going? And the people, they can't hear. This person is seeing them, and as they start seeing that this person is going 40 steps, and then after you've gone outside the 40 step radius, now the person begins to realize, thinking, okay, I am dead. Until then, they are in a hallucination state. They think I'm not dead yet. They think I'm going through some illusion, or I'm going through some dream. It's a very bad dream. This is the feeling of the soul. Reality sinks in when Munkar Nakir come. Now, I don't want to scare and make it too graphic, but one of the hadith says that Munkar and Nakir are two angels, two different angels, which are very, very scary, such that it's bluish. One of the hadith says that they are bluish color and one is blackish color. Blue and black. Both are dark colors. And they have very wretched faces, such faces that as soon as the soul in the grave looks at them, cheek nukharat. It's an itchy, so much scream that, like I said again, all the animals, all the birds, all the trees, everything can hear. Only one who cannot hear is insan and jinn. Jinn also share with us the same thing, free will. And that's why Allah has stopped them from listening to what's going to be. And then they begin the question, which we all know, the three questions that they go through. And then the azab of the qabr begins. And the grave life begins. Either it becomes Hufra min Hufra Nar, it becomes a hole of the hole of Nair, or a pit of the pit of big fire, or it becomes Rawda min Riyad al-Jannah. It becomes a garden from the gardens of paradise. And then we know that the different various things, one of the things that the first comes into the grave is money. It comes in the form of a snake, serpent. All the money that we hoarded, all the money that we staved off, and all the money that we stored, and especially if someone didn't give zakat, first snake that comes is the snake of zakat. The snake of money is different. The snake of zakat is such that the one who did not give zakat in deen, in ma'amlat of deen, and they were having istitaab zakat. It's just that they were lazy, sloppy. Zakat is the first thing that comes as a hayya. Hayya is like a huge python snake. The kind of hayya is the same snake that came to Musa alayhi salam. Remember that it was, Allah says in Surah Taha, is huwa hayyatun tas'a. It's a snake that is ever reaching higher. It was higher than the head of Moses, Musa alayhi salam. And by the way, Musa alayhi salam was not a short man, pretty tall man. And it was higher than that. So this hayya comes in the grave saying that I am the zakat that you never gave on earth. And wraps around the neck collar and squeezes. And the snake of mal, which means that the person didn't give sadaqah, didn't give charity, this is other than zakat. Person who always tried to, like many opportunities came and passed by in front of this person, they could have given a dollar, a dime, a nickel, something. But they left that cause by. That is why the Rasulullah said, like the ayah in the Quran, وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرُ. Why was this ayah revealed? This ayah was revealed that look, sa'il, sa'il is sawali, cause. You know, in the masjid, in the center, in different places, people stand up and say, there's a cause. It does not mean that every time somebody announces a cause, that we have to give big amounts, even something. Because the bottom line is that as a Muslim, we should not pass by in front of a cause without dropping even a nickel or a dime, or a penny even. Otherwise, that cause will be written on our left side, in our amal of bad deeds, not in the good deeds. That you had an opportunity, a questioner questioned you for help, and you just totally went aloof in front of them as if thinking, oh, it's not my job, somebody else will take care of it. This is how we are, right? This is the human psyche. Oh, there are 500 people in this masjid, somebody else will give it, why should I give it? No, the answer is from the Quran. وَأَمَّا السَّائِلْ سَائِلْ questioner. That person questioned, whether it was for a cause of a masjid or a school, or someone was trying to marry their daughter, whatever the cause was. As long as we verify that it was a genuine cause, not a professional beggar, we give, we are satisfied. Otherwise we pass on, then these become argument against us on the Day of Judgment, especially in the grave. So therefore these things begin, and then the person, now that the person is now in this new barzakh life, it begins to look around and sees, wow. Now the metaphysical description, scholars have not given that much in detail, that how is the life in the grave, but one thing is sure, that ruh, souls in the grave do interact. They do interact. For example, when any one of us dies and we go there, those who died before us, let me give you an example. For example, you know, in my family, my grandfather has passed away, grandfather both paternal and maternal. So if I die and I go there, I can meet them. Although they've been there for such a long time. That is why you must have heard this. This happens a lot in the subcontinent. कि वो अब्बा जी आए मेरे ख्वाब में बड़ा सफेद कपड़ा पहने बहुत ही नूर नूरानी चेहरे और कह रहे आ जाओ मेरे पास क्यों नहीं आए and then a week later you hear that person died because this is the sunnah of Allah SWT. This is the way that when a person's time is coming, people who are already there in barzakh, and if this person is, by the way, this is for good people, because then अच्छे लोगों को पता चल जाता है चलने का time हो रहा. I remember when my maternal grandfather passed away, he had made all arrangements, and he was making arrangements so much that my grandmother, who's still alive, mashallah, she's almost 80, she said, why are you doing this? Oh no, he never said I'm dying. He doesn't, because the person who's dying doesn't die, doesn't know him that. He made the excuse, oh no, I have this restlessness, bichainiya, bisukuniya, I want to make sure these things are done. Well, what you bought time for? I mean, she kept saying, a week later the guy went. And my grandmother was literally like, you know, burst open, like, oh my God, he knew. No, he did not know. But Allah inspires the soul. That is only for the good soul. In such that the good soul doesn't say, oh, listen guys, I'm going to be dying in a week. So can you guys make arrangements? No. It's just that his or her deeds or amal begin to give a replica, a showings. And if somebody is very, very pious, then those who let it down, they begin to start coming in their khwab, dream. So much so, I remember that one of our relatives said that, you know, his one of our distant relatives, they said their father had died. Father and son died in between a month. So, of course, he was going through the mourning of his death of his father and all that. But he would see these dreams and images that he's very happy, the father. He's always calling, come, Arjo, come. And he would say, how can I go to him? I just see this in a dream. Little did he know that his time was soon ending. And he went. So it is true that once you get there, you begin to see people already there, there's interaction. Don't ask me the how of it, because there's no hadith that tells the how of it. Like, is it we say, Salam, hi, what's up, buddy, what's going on? How's the grave like? How's buzz going on? I'm just new in here, you know. Juma, I didn't want to be there. No. We don't know about these modalities. It's up to anybody. We don't know what's going to happen. But we do know that it is true that there will be interaction. Now, does that mean that the good souls in Barzakh will interact with good souls and the bad souls? Allah knows best. We'll find out when we get there. Which is very scary. But, and, oh, it's very good. So, let me wrap it up.
I want to just mention the question is, maybe the young kids, the teenagers know the question and answer.
Questions of the grave, the first three questions.
Okay. What are the questions? It's time to put the parents on spot. They didn't do the homework. Man Rabbuka. First question is, who is your Lord? By the way, there is a difference of opinion. But would this question be asked to only Muslims or all the people? Majority of the scholars say we ask for everybody. Kafir, Munafir, Muslim. Of course, Kafir, Munafir will fail it one after another. Tick, 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 done. Muslim, depending on their Amal, because some Muslims will fail drastically. They'll fail by minus 10 points. They won't even get secured zero. And therefore, they will know nothing. Because they live their life on earth just as a name Muslim, for name's sake. While others who practice would be able to. Some may pass the first question only and fail the second two. That is possible as Muslims. Some may pass the first two and fail the third one. But the best Muslim is the one who passes all three. That when the image of Rasul is shown, they know that this is Rasul. Although all of our life we never see him. But this is the value of Sunnah of Muhammad. Then when we see that question immediately, we right away recognize. And therefore, one of the aspects of Azab al-Qabr, I want to wrap it up in conclusion, the last part very quickly in 2 minutes, is what can save us from Azab al-Qabr? One of the things that the scholars have said, and Rasul Sam said, is Ar-Rabat, Rabt. Rabt literally means like a rope tie. So when they ask, what is this rope tie, it means tie with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Think of yourself, what is it that we do in our daily life that connects us with Allah? Salah. I knew everybody else. Yeah. So the one who prays, jo jitna namaz yoga, utna kam azab al-qabr us pe. Or jitna kam namaz. That's why salah was so much emphasized by Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. If not for anything else, at least for the sake of azab al-qabr. If I want to reduce and diminish my azab al-qabr there, I have to be praying 5 times a day. Sahaba radhiyallahu, don't think that they're angels. They're human beings like me and you. Many of them would miss salah. Some would miss Fajr. You know, today we say, oh, kitne badbakht hai, Fajr miss ho rahi. Don't take me wrong, there are many Sahaba, we see in the hayat of Sahaba, that they would happen to be the missed Fajr. But, they're not like us. So we wake up from 8 o'clock alarm, okay, got up. Didn't even realize, did I even wake up for Fajr? Didn't realize all that. No, if they miss Fajr, they'd be crying so much that their beards would get wet. Or as some riwayat say, that they'll be crying as if somebody died in their front. That when somebody would ask, why are you crying so much? They'll say, oh, my Fajr missed today. Today, if you ask somebody why you're crying, he says, my Fajr missed today. Say, oh, this guy's insane. Pagal ho rahi hai. Fajr pe itna ro raha hai. Baap ke marne pe itna nahi ro raha hai, itna Fajr pe ro raha hai. And that is one aspect of that we need to understand. Rab. Second thing is Shahada. And in fact, this is the people that are exempt. Shahada means martyrdom. And does not mean just go kill yourself or something. But Shahada has many darajat, mind you. There are 7 darajat of Shaheed. Highest darajat is the one that dies in the battlefield. That's the highest. And the odds of anybody getting that is very high. It's not easy. So, does that mean that we'll be mahroom from Shahada? No. Rasul Sam said in the hadith, that man mata maridan mata shaheedan. Very nice short hadith of Rasul. Whoever dies with sickness, dies a shaheed. And this is the first thing I go telling those people who have cancer patients. Allah has chosen you to clean yourself before you go to the grave. And Allah is loving you so much that He gave you this cancer. You know, when you first say, what, Allah gave me cancer? Are you insane? Pagal ho gaye, aap mubarakbad de rahe. You're telling me a good thing? Yes, it's a good thing. Because this is the hadith of Rasulullah. That if somebody dies because of a terminal illness, cancer is a terminal illness, right?
Yeah.
Last I checked, it was a terminal illness, unless you guys change it. So therefore that person dies a shaheed. But his daraja of shaheed is not the daraja of shaheed of the one that gave their blood in the battlefield. However, at least they can secure from azab al-qabr. The one who dies in the grave and the battlefield also safe from azab al-qabr. The one who dies from sickness, terminal sickness, shaheed. Another daraja of shaheed is someone who dies protecting their man, their honor, dignity. Like somebody broke into your house and is about to attack your wife or your daughter or something, and you try to defend them and you die in the line of defense, you're dying shaheed. You're walking on Manhattan, Times Square, down the sidewalk, somebody comes up, mugs you, but you grab your hand, oh, no, I'm not going to let you get this wallet, boom, shaheed. Now, I'm not saying, Kalko paata chala ke Times Square mein 2000 laashe padi. Hey, what is this? Oh, these are all shaheed. They purposely went there to get themselves mugged, because Rasulullah said, oh, if you die protecting your wallet or looting, you know. No. There's something known as deliberate intention and something known by chance. Yeah, coincidentally it happened that somebody attacked you or stealing your money and you stalked and you died. That's but deliberately doing that. And there somebody who drowned in the water is shaheed. Somebody who fell off a cliff is shaheed. There's so many hadiths. Like I said, there's seven darajat of shaheed. Accidents are there too. So these people also, shahada is a way. But now you might be asking, so if shahada is a way of securing not to have azab al-qabr, can we make dua for shahada? What's the answer?
No.
Those who say yes, raise your hand. Mumtaz. Excellent, excellent sisters. Three sisters, they're the winner. Rasulullah said, make dua for shahada. That mu'min is not a mu'min who doesn't have the desire of shahada in the heart. And the sahaba asked, how should we make dua for shahada? He said, ask Allah, that, oh Allah, bless me the mouth of shahada. We're all gonna die. Why scared of death? Why scared of death to make dua? We're gonna die anyway. We might get die by a shot, die from a cancer also, or die regularly. So might as well start making dua that, oh Allah, when my khatima, when my life ends in this dunya, let it end on shahada. Now it's up to Allah to choose what kind of shahada He wants to bless me. Whether He wants to give me the best, behtareen, the afzal shahada, like in the battlefield, or whether He wants to give me shahada in terms of some disease. Like my father-in-law is in Jeddah, where my wife and all the kids are. He has Parkinson's disease for the last 21 years. When I got married to my wife, I remember at the time of Nikah, his hand was really shaking. You know, Muhammad Ali Clay and that guy, Fox, Michael J. Fox. This is, I remember when I was marrying my wife at the place where the Qazi of Nikah, he's shaking, moving like this. Because this is what happened. Now he has come to a point, because obviously with the aging, it's going very bad. He has had four surgeries. Four electrodes are in his brain. I was talking to my wife just yesterday. He fell on the ground. Now that he has reached such a maximum stage of Parkinson that he cannot walk. Every time he walks, he may be walking perfectly fine with all those shaking jitters. Suddenly he will just drop down. Like my son was saying that, oh Baba, I was going with Nana to the masjid. And the masjid, you know, in Saudi Arabia, the masjid was very close. It's right across from the house. We were crossing the road, he fell on the ground. And I was holding his hand. But he just suddenly fell. And he fell, he had 14 stitches over here. The cut was so deep, it was reaching the electrode. The people in the hospital, where the surgeons were so scared, they said, we don't want to operate on this person. Take him to some other major hospital in the town. Because we fear that if he do the surgery, it might touch the electrode and then his whole imbalance might happen. The purpose of this is not to talk about my personal story or something, but I want to show, he is a man. You know, he's like the Amir of Tablighi Jamaat in that area. He's a man that I've never seen even speak with a high-pitched voice. He's a man that I've seen, I've been 10 years married to my wife, in 10 years, I've never seen this man ever get angry. Where people have sometimes abused him so much on the road, giving curses at him. And I scratch my head and I say, and I look at him, Ya Allah, what has this person done to you? He has nothing. This person prays five times a day. If he ever misses Fajr because of his Parkinson's disease, he is crying with hiccups. Like a child cries for a lost toy. And then you ask that, oh Allah, there are such pious people on earth, and yet they're going through so much pain. The message, Allah wants to save them from Azab al-Qabr. When you understand these hadiths and you put together, that is why someone said to me that we as Muslims, we are very gutsy people. We have a lot of immunity. Because whenever some bad happens to us, we are sometimes immune. Some people, when they face such tragedies, calamities, they have a heart attack. You know, like somebody, their business all burned overnight, they faint, heart failure, because they didn't have the capacity to bear it. Muslim is the only makhluk on earth that has enough immunity to absorb, to tolerate, to digest calamities. Why? Because of Iman. The third thing is qira'ah of Surah Tabarak. You know Surah Tabarak, Tabarak al-Ladhi, you know. That surah, the more we recite. Why? Because if you look at the meanings of that surah, it all reminds us of grave, afterlife, akhirat, next life. So we have salat as a savior from azab al-qabr, we have shahada as a savior from azab al-qabr, we have Surah Tabarak as a savior, and we have different other azkar which we can take next time. For here today, we'll suffice with this much enough, inshallah. Wa akhira da'wana, wa salatu wa salam. We can open the floor for any questions if anybody has.